You have the season starting out with a thoroughly romantic period performance to get things off with a bang.
That's correct. Yeah, it's going to be a huge opener with two wonderful composers that have so much in common.
Well, let's start with the Schumann. I don't know what order you're going to play them in.
Yeah, the concert opens with the Schumann, the Symphony No. 3 in E-flat major, which he entitled The Rhenish. This is comes in his 97th work in his opus numbers. Again, both composers wrote four symphonies, which is an interesting number because coming off of Beethoven with the 9, kind of breaking the mold, you know, of course, it was Haydn with 104 and then, you know, Beethoven with Symphony 9. And both Brahms and Schumann wrote four symphonies, but in my mind, four fabulous symphonies that are chock full of concepts and ideas. And of course, you know, we never know what came first. Is it the fact that the composer is writing and breaking the forms and changing things, or were they writing to please the form of music that was changing under them, or was it a combination of the both?
Well, they both are unusual pieces in that the symphony has 5 movements instead of 4, and the concerto 4 instead of 3, so I'm certainly different
in
that way.
So they've exploded the form of both the symphony and the concerto form in this concept, and I think that is enough right there. We could talk about that for about 3 hours.
No kidding.
Because what comes after that is affected by all of this. Now, the fact that number 3 was Schumann's last symphony is also interesting because he had a very short, turbulent life. As we know, he ended up in an insane asylum and I think passed away there.
Yeah, 1856, only, 46 years old.
And he had so much to say. And think of what he could have said another 40 years from then. You know what I mean? What he was developing and what he was changing. Now, I think because these were colleagues, these were contemporaries of each other, and they spent time together, both as composer and conductors, they would have been very familiar with each other's works. And there's a common sound. There's this tonality and color that they use, and Brahms uses it, and Schumann uses it beautifully. It's this cello, bassoon, horn color that's very rich and wonderful. And they both use that color to a wonderful level. And Robert Schumann's brass writing I find to be extraordinarily beautiful. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. There were 4 horns in that orchestra. Was that common around 1850 when this was written, or was that breaking tradition too?
That was also breaking tradition, and with different crooks, different pitched horns at the same time, which adds color choices. Not only is he using 4 horns, he's using B-flat horns, E-flat horns, you know. So there's crook differences and color differences within those 4 horns.
The piece starts out so fabulously. There's no intro. It just jumps into this great, noble theme. And, you know, the key of E-flat sends you back to Beethoven's 3rd.
Exactly right. The Eroica, which was huge, which probably was something he was thinking about because, you know, with the added movement, I think this is just a grand size of grandeur. And it starts so dynamically that it's as if he just drops the needle.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been listening to this symphony for 10 minutes already.
Right in the first minute, he actually starts developing that theme instead of waiting till later in the movement like you would in traditional sonata form. So it's just fabulous.
Exactly right. And I think there's real hints of Schubert in this writing. I think there's beautiful moments, some Brahmsian things that are clearly there, but also this Beethoven idea of how to misplace the downbeat, misplacing the strong beat, putting it in a weak area, is just typical Beethoven, which Schubert picked on up later, and all these composers were just learning and learning from each other, and it's all right there in this music. And then the play with the rhythm itself, you know, starting it off, like for example, the 4th movement, which is very grave and slow. It's this classic moment of the trombones playing, you know, with the alto trombone, the tenor trombone, and the bass trombone is a color we don't often hear in the trombone section.
Yeah.
The alto is not used that often, but it puts, again, another layer of color option that we're not familiar with, yet it's so beautiful. I'm puzzled why other composers haven't gravitated and used that more. And combining that with the horns, which at that moment are in E-flat, it's just a beautiful, beautiful sound. A fabulous piece of music that needs to be heard. It's a staple in the repertoire. It's a huge piece. Since I've been with the symphony, we've not done a Schumann symphony, so this is a new thing, and I'm excited about drawing the color out of the orchestra because this is about emotion, color, and this new dynamic of style and the size of the symphony is just wonderful. Architecturally, it's difficult to conduct and to play because, you know, if it's fast, slow, fast movements, you know where it is, you know. But this is a little bit different. This is a little different pacing, and I'm excited about all those relationships by tempo.
Well, that shows you how good it is to have a really nice vacation, because Schumann and his wife, Clara, had a great trip to the Rhineland before he wrote this.
They must have. They must have, yes.
It's worth mentioning this. Brahms was born, what, some 22, 23 years after Schumann.
Well, like I mentioned to you right off the bat, George, they shared a lot of things. They shared the colors of the orchestra. They shared the idea of changing and exploding this form, both in the concerto we're going to hear and in the symphony. But they also shared a love. And her name was Clara. And that's more of a Jerry Springer show than our show. But it's a really beautiful thing that there was this real sense of connection. Now, as I understand it, it was always respectful on Brahms' side. And actually, after the passing of Schumann, I read recently that actually Brahms actually backed off the relationship and didn't spend as much time with her. But always had this fondness. It was always just something special between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know how deep it really went, but that it was a little bit sticky, a little bit interesting. So they shared a lot of things. Now, Clara, it was a great composer and a great musician herself, which unfortunately didn't get enough credit in her lifetime because of the way of society's standards and the limitations of women in those days, which is a crime, you know.
Sure.
But she did edit and look over most of Robert's music. So we wonder how many changes did she make to this symphony herself in her pen under his name? Because she was a real force, a real great player, and the composition aspect of herself. And it's actually notated in the Breitkopf scores, edited by Clara Schumann.
Any thoughts on the fact that it's keyed in B-flat? That's, I don't know if that be considered a little bit darker key than, say, C or D.
I think it is a little darker in sound.
Certainly a lot of the music is, so it's very fitting.
Right. And then the way he starts it out very somberly with the horn call, it's just very, very beautiful. I'm not sure it's even an introduction. It's simply a statement and a response between the horn and the pianist. Almost like it's like a calling, like dee-da-dum, bing-bum-bum-bum, and the arpeggiation. And then the answer of, well, what do you think of what I said? And then slowly the winds come in and the orchestra builds until the piano abruptly takes off. It's real dialogue. It's really wonderful. You start to listen behind the notes and between the notes instead of just the notes and the rhythms. You realize that there's a real story, there's a real concept here. And what these composers were writing was not simply music, but it's life, life experiences.
The third movement has some of that great, slow, melodic writing at which Brahms was so fabulous.
Just lyricism at its best, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really beautiful music. Yet, there's parts of the symphonies in here. I hear some things, some of the all this motives, like we're even in the fourth symphony of Brahms himself. I guess when you come up with an idea that really works and you love it, it's fun to shade it, you color it and hide it and put it back into your own music. No, I think it's going to be a great season, chock full of these great, great masterpieces. And I'm very excited about it. We're also bringing in Fabio Bedini from Italy to play this piece. And he's recorded it with major, major orchestras and is a real force. So I'm very happy to work with Fabio. It gives our orchestra and our audience a real treat.